All right, we get ready for baseball. This 9-game homestand in 10 days kicked off last night. And, of course, the righties, 11 homers against Will Crow, 11 homers in the 60 innings against right-handed batters. Joining us is Andy Baggerly at Extra Bags on Twitter. Of course, one of our favorites. He writes for The Athletic. Extra, how are you today?
Hey, Marty, I'm good. Good to be on with you.
No, it's a pleasure. It's been too long, so we're glad to have you. Give me a perspective on where we are right now vis-a-vis the Padres, the Dodgers, the four-game series down there, and really 65 to go. And I know we're pretty excited about where we are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can't remember a more exciting rivalry series. We've certainly had some big moments in the Dodger-Giant rivalry over the years, a lot of them, you know, preceding me, of course, but just three games decided with the team that was behind in the ninth inning coming back to win in a row. I mean, you just can't get any better than that. And, you know, Gabe Kapler was asked after they beat Kenley Jansen for the second time, you know, hey, you know, what do you make of where your team is? And he's like, what I make of it is we're facing the Pirates and they're hungry and they're going to be ready for us. So we better be ready for them. And, you know, it really is sort of a drumbeat for Gabe Kapler is, I'm not going to react too much to what just happened, whether it's good or bad. I'm going to focus forward and focus on what's next. And he was right. This Pirates team came out. They played a lot better than the Giants did, and they won the first game of that series. And you know, we know the Dodgers are coming right back in. And any team that goes on a lull here and loses six in a row, seven in a row, probably you're gonna be out of a division race because, you know, the other two teams are not going away. We see how depleted all the rosters have been over the years, and yet all three teams have still managed to pile up wins. So, you know, it's just going to be who can hit the accelerator the hardest down the stretch because we know that no one's going to back into this division title.
No, there's so much more baseball to go. That's the big thing that I want to stress to everybody. That with 65 to go, we've got the meat of the baseball season ahead of us. It looks like the three teams in the West will be playoff teams. The Padres are 6.5 ahead of Cincinnati right now. And, of course, if the Giants ever needed this, they're about 11 ahead of Cincinnati. They're never going to need it. But how do you view that one? Because Castellanos is out for the Reds. You think this thing is sort of a done deal as much as it can be at this time of year? Padres, Dodgers, Giants?
You know, I'd like to say so. I certainly would if I had to wager on it, I'd say so. But we've seen it so many times over the years where a team comes out of nowhere or just streaks in the second half. You know, there could be a team, and I really thought the Atlanta Braves would be a team that could go on a big-time run in the second half because you look sort of under the hood at their numbers, and they've pitched pretty well. They just had some guys offensively hadn't gotten going, but obviously, Ronald Acuna Jr. going out for the year probably changes that quite a bit. But there are teams in the East. The Phillies are talking about being aggressive adders of the trade deadline. The Nationals are not necessarily selling off. So, you know, we'll see if the Mets have some competition and if one of those teams can get really, really hot. They could make things interesting. But I think you're right. As things are setting up, it certainly would seem like the odds are pretty great in the favor of both wild cards coming out of the NL West at this point.
Boy, Andy Baggerly joins us. This is a very exciting time of year for you as a beat writer. And look, the trade deadline's coming up, next Friday, I think, 1 o'clock Pacific. And everybody in the world, even me, throwing out names. I said Kenta Maeda, he would look good as a Giant. Anthony Bednar, I think, is the name. Anthony Bender with the Marlins. I love the way this guy throws. But this is an exciting time for you as a beat writer. How do you approach it and get information and sources to sort of give an inside view as to what could happen?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if exciting would be the word I would use to describe it. It's one of those things where, you know, teams are going to keep things close to the vest, and anything that does leak out, there's probably going to be a purpose behind it. And, you know, part of me is just like, you know, let these guys do their jobs, and when there's news to report, we'll report it, and we can analyze it and say what it means and go through the pros and cons and everything. And it's fun to kind of play GM a little bit and come up with lists of names of people who could help them or ways teams could have different matches. And, yeah, you definitely can hear things, you know, word of things here or there. But, you know, I think it was for us, it's more just paranoia kind of takes over from a personal standpoint as a reporter. You don't want to get scooped on something. And of course, you'd love to be able to scoop everybody else. But even that's changed, because if you used to have a scoop, you'd have it in the paper the next day and everyone would have to wear it for 24 hours. And now someone tweets it and then everyone retweets it 2 seconds later. So, you know, you're just always kind of on call. It feels like you got like 6 beepers attached to you, if you remember what those were. And I'm just glad when the trade deadline is over, to be honest. But we'll see. It's a great action date. Action dates are important on the calendar for baseball executives because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that can get drawn out over time. And when you have action deadlines, that sort of forces things to happen sometimes. And we've seen teams make deals at the trade deadline that aren't just for, you know, helping them get to the finish line or helping them add a pitcher to a postseason rotation, but sometimes they can add foundational pieces and really change sort of the trajectory of a franchise or change some of the major names in a franchise, because it's an action date. It's an opportunity to make moves that can not only affect you in the short term, but also in the long term. And I think the Giants, you know, may have some possibilities to make moves that are beyond just little depth pieces here or there. But those trades are also harder to come together. So you maybe keep your expectations somewhat limited, but I do think the Giants are going to be aggressive. I do think they're going to improve themselves. And I would expect the Dodgers and Padres to do the same.
Well, a lot could happen by Friday, and this is Saturday already, and then no deals in August. There are no more waiver deals, so this is it. Your team, July 30th, basically that's what you got, unless you pick somebody up on waivers. All right, that'll be interesting. Hey, this weekend, of course, July 24th, there'll be a very special event in Cooperstown. And it's the awarding of the 2021 Baseball Writers Association of America Career Excellence Award. And that went to Dick Cagle this year. But, of course, there was no ceremony last year. And Nick Cafardo, the late Nick Cafardo, would have gotten the award. Just some of your thoughts on Dick Cagle and Nick Cafardo, because they will be honored. It's either today or tomorrow. I think it's on TV tomorrow. It's a TV-only event.
Yeah, right. So Dick Cagle, longtime writer, covered the Kansas City Royals for MLB.com, for The Star. And I think what stands out to me most is he's someone who just very quietly did his job and showed up. I mean, they say most of the job is showing up, and there's no question that he did that. And even after he had some very serious health concerns, he wanted to kind of make a point to himself. And when he got back and was able to be healthy enough to be at the ballpark, not only did he resume his job, but he covered all 162 games in a Royals season just to prove that he could do it. And I've never done it. I didn't do it any time in my 20s, in my 30s. It sounds kind of insane to do it, but he did it, and with all the travel. And then you may even think to yourself, well, that's not that hard. The players will have to show up for 162 games, but you know, they're on their chartered flights, and you know, they're able to get out after a night game, and you know, we're on commercial flights going through, you know, making multiple stops sometimes, and sometimes you can't even get there for the next game, especially when the team goes home without a day off. So, you know, I mean, it really is quite a feat to cover 162 games, and he did it. And I think that was tremendously inspiring to a lot of people. And Nick Cafardo, you just won't find anyone that has a bad thing to say about him, because he was always so generous with his time, you know, treated younger reporters with just as much respect as sort of the group in his cohort that he would pal around with. And of course, his son does a great job in PR for ESPN. And you can tell by, you know, just how great a relationship they had. And I think you can learn a lot from what a father-son relationship is like from afar to understand what those people are like. And, you know, just somebody who was very generous with his time, with his spirit, and is missed by a lot of people.
Yeah, he was a great guest on KMBR, I'll tell you that. Larry had him all the time. I had him on for years, even when I did the A's pregame. Nick Cafardo, a very, very special man. And, of course, on the Ford Frick Award, and that goes for broadcasting excellence. Look, these people are Hall of Famers, as far as I'm concerned, no matter what they call it. Ken the Hawk Harrelson, now you're a Chicago guy. The Hawk is going in. How about that?
Yeah, you know, there are people who just don't like his style, and obviously he's an unabashed homer, probably the most homerific announcer that you could find in modern times. But, you know, he never pretended to be anything other than what he wasn't. And, you know, look, this game is about entertainment, right? As much as we like to talk about the players as if they're Wall Street commodities and go through all of the ways that we sort of value players these days or treat it like they're, you know, actuarial numbers on a table. I mean, this still is a game about entertainment. And I think that when you watched, you can't put it on the board. Yes. You know, he was there to entertain and to have fun. And I think that he's still going to be the voice of the White Sox for a couple generations of White Sox fans. And I just hope, and I know that they can't do this because they never put in more than one person at a time, mm-hmm. but if you want to guarantee yourself the greatest Cooperstown speech of all time, put in Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko and put them in together. Please, can we make this happen? We got to make
this
happen.
It's going to happen. I'm confident it will happen, and it's deservedly so, and I believe it will happen. I really do. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's the Hawk. We have an interview with the Hawk coming up after we talk with Bruce Jenkins today. You'll just love it because it's all broadcast and how he got in and all that stuff. That's going to be a lot of fun. Let me bring in the big right-hander, Bill Lasky, and turn it over to Bill for a bit, along with Andy Bagley. Bill, good to talk to you.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. I like the Hawk Harrelson there, Bags. That was pretty good. And my vote also is in for Kruk and Kipe. I think they have to get in together. I think that's a great combination. But I got a question for both of you. With the IL, players coming off the IL pretty soon, especially Longoria, Crawford, and then you have Maranta. What's going to happen with this roster? There's going to have to be some changes, and then the pressure is going to be on the front office also for trades because that's going to be more moves. So I give you first one, Bags.
Yeah, well, you know what, Bill, and good to talk with you. I think one of the reasons that they weren't too hesitant to transfer Evan Longoria to the 60-day is because that sort of, you know, shifts his eligibility into August when they can get through the trade deadline, see just what pencils out and who they can acquire, and keep their options relatively fluid. Because, like you say, they don't just have to add some of these guys back to the active roster. In the case of a Longoria or a Tommy La Stella, or Reyes Maranta, those guys are on the 60-day IL, so they have to be added back to the 40-man as well. And we'll see if maybe they can trade off the 40-man, whether that's a Tyler Beede or a Mauricio Dubon or even an Alexander Canario, who's still a couple years away but is on the 40-man because they had to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. So, you know, we'll have a better idea how all that shakes out. But you're right. I think that's one thing that's really weighing on the mind of this front office is, hey, you know, we got to see how these pieces that we have in-house are going to fit mm-hmm. in addition to what we can get from the outside world. And that definitely does complicate matters a little bit. Some things will be easy. You have guys who are optionable, like Jason Vossler and a couple guys in the bullpen. But some other moves are going to be a little tougher to make.
Yeah, and then you don't know who's going to be healthy. You don't know, will Belt last a week? Will Longoria's shoulder, you know, could that be something that he's in and out of the lineup? So you don't want to lose people. Bill, I'll throw it back to you. You played. This is a very interesting time of year for you as a player. And 82, you're in a pennant race going down the trade deadline, sitting in the clubhouse. What did you think, and what should the Giants do? Because you were in a clubhouse. Do you bust up the chemistry of a team? What did they do for you in 82?
In 82, we really didn't do much because we had a lot of young talent. It was the years after Marty where you were more or less at the bottom of the division and the top players were talked about in trades. And you could see the nervousness in some of these guys when they went out to pitch, when they went out to play, because they saw two or three teams, maybe even more, watching them. And you hear your names in trade rumors. That's the other thing. Always the front office said, quit reading the trade rumors. Quit reading about things that may not even be talked about. So it is a nervous time. You know, I ended up talking to Bob Walk today, and he talked about the Pittsburgh Pirate locker room. And there's about three or four players that are a little nervous on what could happen. So, you know, Bags, it is a nervous time. It is a exciting time for the top-tier teams. And I'm going to throw one to you. Who do you think they're targeting right now, Bags?
Well, I think they're targeting starting pitching, and they know that, you know, and Farhan Zaidi has put it in these terms. He said, look, if you have You know, you can withstand injuries on the position player side by moving people around, and we've seen them do that. You can even withstand some injuries in the bullpen because you have, you know, a number of people who can shift roles. But it's really hard to cover injuries in the rotation or guys who need to start missing some turns or ineffectiveness. And they don't really have that next level at AAA. So I do think they see that as an area that they probably will need to cover themselves. And you know, it's a difference between you're a team like the Astros from a couple years ago and you have the division wrapped up and you go out and you get a Justin Verlander because you know he's going to head up a playoff rotation. Versus you're a team that's in a three-way struggle with two other teams that you know aren't going away for the division, and you may end up and you know, two out of those three teams are going to end up in a one-game playoff. Well, you don't necessarily think ahead to, hey, I'm going to get the star guy that's going to, you know, be a number one or number two starter in a postseason rotation. Sometimes you just get the depth piece that you know will help you cover innings. So, you know, one guy I think it makes a lot of sense, and I don't know what the cost is going to be, but Kenta Maeda is pitching a lot better in Minnesota. He's a guy that has postseason experience as a starter and long reliever. We know that Farhan Zaidi is very familiar with him from their time with the Dodgers. I just think he's a guy who would really, really help the situation here. And according to my colleague at The Athletic who covers the Twins, Dan Hayes, Maeda, you know, was a little more hittable early in the year. He was going through some stuff physically, but he's really trending up now. So, and he's controllable for another couple of years at a very modest salary that's got that's mostly tied to performance bonuses. So he's not going to be given away, that's for sure. And you know, they certainly have Taylor Rogers who could help them from the left side. In addition to being fun, you have identical twins in the same bullpen. You know, there are other guys out there that can certainly help them on the Cubs. And Craig Kimbrell, there's no question, could help them shorten the game. That could be a big-time addition, but it's going to cost them a lot. But I think a starting pitcher and probably a mid-range starting pitcher will be probably the most likely if you're trying to set expectations for what the Giants will get.
Boy, that's what I said. I said Maeda. Very good.
You did.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I thought of him this week. I said, absolutely. This Merrill Kelly is pitching great ball for Arizona. Mm-hmm. Great ball. In fact, he's pitching today against the Cubs. I'm telling you, people are going to be after him. Andy, let me ask you about the rotation, though. Do you feel okay? I know you want another starter. You say that's what they need. But, I mean, you got Gausman. You got DeSclafani. You got Wood. Logan Webb is looking like he's coming back. Cueto, I want to get your opinion of why is a starter so important here?
Well, I think because after that, then you start having some questions. I mean, Sam Long filled in nicely, but he's on the injured list right now. We know Aaron Sanchez is working his way back, but, you know, when we did see him healthier early in the season, you know, I think you looked at the stuff and thought, no, he's getting away with a lot of hard contact here. And then Tyler Beede has not looked ready. He's not throwing enough strikes to be the sort of, you know, sixth man or depth piece that they had hoped that he would be. So, you know, I think they have to just be proactive and make sure that they're not caught, you know, unprepared for when one of these guys maybe goes down. And one of the things you have to look at and they have to be concerned about is none of these guys had a second half last year. None of these guys had to throw their 100th inning, 110th inning, 120th inning, 140th inning. You know, it was a 60-game season. So, you know, I think that as much as they've tried to pace everybody, as much as they've tried to give, you know, Buster Posey his days off, you know, spread out the workload with the relievers, not have guys go 3 days in a row, there's only so much you can do with a starting pitcher that throws once every 5 days. And, you know, I think that they're probably going to be concerned that, you know, these guys are going into the red at 140 innings, whereas maybe in the past they'd be going into the red at 200 innings based on the fact that no one had any workload last year that was meaningful. So I think that's got to be one of the things they layer in. But then again, I think every other team in baseball is probably layering that in too.
Well, it's a good point. Give me Kimbrell and Chris Bryant and throw Maeda in and I'll win the pennant. How about that? I'll tell you.
There you go. Those are three pretty good choices. I like
yeah.
that. I like
give
that.
Me those three and I'll win the division and I'll take a good shot at winning the pennant. All right. Andy, a pleasure.
I told Zach Manassian, the Giants scouting director, I said, you know, his brother Perry's the GM in Anaheim. I said, come on, you got to be able to get Raisel Iglesias.
Really?
Use your family connections here to bring him into.
Well, they need pitching. Unfortunately, the Giants don't have much pitching to trade is the problem, and that's why they have to go out and get somebody. But they drafted – what do you think of the draft? I mean, Bill, I'll let you say something as well here. It looks like they just drafted pitchers right and left.
I thought Bags were going to talk about that. No, I agree with you. That's okay. No, I agree with you, Marty. In the first signing, he was at the ballpark last night. I thought that was a really cool little celebration they had with he and his family. And, of course, his brother who pitches for Pittsburgh. But you're starting to see all these guys starting to sign now. Of course, rookie ball is starting to get going down in Sarasota. So it's going to be interesting to see how many other players that weren't drafted sign as free agents. And I think that's where you're going to get more players being signed, Bags.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the people who really, really follow the draft, I think when Khalil Watson, the North Carolina high school shortstop, fell out of the top 10, and he was really seen as one of the premier talents in the draft, and when he fell to where the Giants could have picked him, I think there was a lot of disappointment that maybe they didn't take him. They also could have taken Matt McClain, the really, really good shortstop out of UCLA. UCLA shortstops worked out pretty well for the Giants, you might say. But they took Will Bednar, who really was one of the stars of the College World Series, you know, a guy from Mississippi State that they really liked. And I don't think there's any question. You always hear, hey, we're drafting the best player available. But when you take pitchers, you know, with 90 or first 10 picks or whatever it was, then you know that there is a conscious effort to try to balance out the system. And, you know, I think that that's not too surprising. And the Angels were even, heavier, like you said, than the Giants were taking pitchers. So and maybe that has something to do with the fact that this was another different draft, not as different as last year, but they're not operating with the same scouting reports. They're not operating with the same sort of bulk of college or high school plate appearances that they would have seen. And maybe in a way they've got more TrackMan data and more data on pitching that they feel is objective and predictable. And maybe in a way they felt that the pitchers were easier to evaluate than hitters. So that may have played a part as well. And, you know, the Giants certainly ended up with some arms that they like, and it'll be a while before we see them in the big leagues, but we also know that sometimes guys can move pretty fast. So, I'm sure that all of the folks in the pitching development sphere are really excited to have a lot of new arms to work with.
Boy, interesting time of year, not only the pennant race, but trades and all sorts of stuff. And this has been a good baseball season. Very, very interesting. We're always going to remember 2021. Andy, thanks for coming on today. A pleasure to have you on.
Thanks,
really.
Andy.
Okay. Thanks, Marty. Thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay, that's at Extra Bags on Twitter, Andy Baggerly of The Athletic. Bill comes back with Bob Walk, TV analyst of the Pirates. I'm interested to see what his thoughts are about Will Crow today. Will Crow today, and also the possibility in that Pirate bullpen, which is outstanding, seeing if some of those players get moved. So more coming up, KNBR 680, 104.5, the Sports Leader.